Mysterio Lionel! Extraordinario! Magnifico!
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Football Corner, Mancha's very own home for all things football. My name is Vikram.
My name is Shreyas.
If you guys are new or old, you can catch us wherever you get your podcasts, Google, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, and more.
And don't forget to follow us on social media. That's at Mancha Podcasts.
Great. So we're going to be continuing our Transfer Talks series here. And the team we're going to be tackling today is going to be the Gunners, Arsenal FC. Post which, we're going to jump into a quick round of updates from the world of football in these trying and testing times. So, Shreyas, why don't we just jump right in? Arsenal is in dire need of restructuring.
No, yeah, I mean, I didn't get the memo for Arsenal, but if we're doing Arsenal, I guess I don't need any prep, so why don't we?
Oh, wow. Stop acting cool. I know you've prepped for this episode, all right? Arsenal's seen some sort of uptake, not necessarily in the form of results, but in terms of like a coherent team structure and the way they play football ever since Arteta came on board. So just before we jump into who our picks, top three picks is what we're limiting ourselves to, who our top three picks for Arsenal should be, considering everything in terms of the financial implication of the shutdown, as well as who they should be offloading according to us, what positions they should be strengthening. So right. Before we talk about that, from what we've seen with Arteta now, there is no indicator for us to sort of know what Arteta's playing style is, what the team dynamics look like, because this is his first professional club. I don't know if this is because of the resources he has at Arsenal at his disposal or this is his preferred playing style, but we've seen more or less a 4-2-3-1 sort of line up with this team, where he has these two pivots in terms of these defensive midfielders who can cover someone like a David Luiz, who might just, you know, just venture out in terms of creating passes for the offense. And when that team shifts to the offensive third, it essentially lines up in this 2-3-5, where you can see Ozil becoming a part of that first five to just ensure that they have some attacking threat with Pepe, Ozil, Lacazette, Oba, and Sako as well, who runs up. I'm not sure what position that kid plays, man. I've seen him on left wing. I've seen him on left back. Clearly has a lot of potential. But that's more or less what you see this Arsenal team lining up as. So why don't we just jump into it? Let's just go from top down as opposed to how we traditionally start, which is from the back. I think the assumptions that both you and I are on the same page about is that at least one of their forwards will be offloaded.
I mean, for me, it's one more than the other. But yeah, I think that's going to be a huge gray area for them that they need to sort out ASAP.
100%. And we recently saw Arsenal's chairman have this press release where they apparently had a call with all of the non-playing staff within the team. And
listen, before you continue, this is the same board that said in the summer that they have a 40 million war chest, out of which they spent more than double on one player. So I don't buy what they put out in the media.
That's a fair point. I actually forgot about the 40 million war chest situation. But regardless, facts are facts. This is what happened. And this is what was communicated to the team. Essentially, it was along the lines of massive losses for the season, close to upwards of maybe 100 million or so if the season doesn't conclude. If the season does conclude behind closed doors, they're still going to be in the red, not by as much, but still going to be in the red for sure. So not to expect anything splashy in the transfer market, and which indicates that, and these are testing times for all the clubs, right? Purchasing power for all the clubs has to have reduced the exorbitant prices, probably at least for this season, will have reduced for a lot of the players who are going to be on the market as well. Yeah. So you need to assume some sort of offloading or cashing out on one of your top players just to ensure that you have the requisite amount of money to strengthen your squad.
Yeah.
Now, the name that comes to mind, the first within this Arsenal squad, is obviously Aubameyang. Just given the form he's in and the number of clubs that have been linked with him, I think he's the player that's going to get the most in terms of any sort of money that Arsenal can recoup from his sale and then reinvest back into this transfer market.
Right.
On that note, I think I actually think that Lacazette might just be as promising a sell as Aubameyang. Obviously, I don't see him getting the same amount of money if you sell Aubameyang, even though, like you rightly mentioned before we started recording, this is Aubameyang's last, it's going to be his last year this coming season. So that might have some effect as well in terms of knocking down his price. But I do think Lacazette might be the one leaving. And that's not purely from a financial point of view, but also in terms of how he fits into what we've seen from Arteta's system. Arteta's system, especially that front five, which lines up on offense, doesn't necessarily rely on an out-and-out striker that Lacazette is. Someone who can do a false nine can actually be more beneficial in that system, I believe, just right. because of involving all the other players, making sure someone like an Oba or someone who's like a Martinelli, like they have on their books, could just help with the goal-scoring bit. And yeah. because of that, I think the ideal first pick that Arsenal, according to me, should be going for is, I've said this before for another team, is Rhys Mertens. Purely because of him being available for free. Firstly, I think that's huge. No money to be spent there. Right. Secondly, the experience is huge. And he's very well experienced in terms of playing that false nine position. Mm-hmm. So I think Rhys Mertens would suit this club pretty well.
Interesting. I mean, I see the experience. That's pretty clear to see. But I don't know, at the same time, getting a 30-plus-year-old who relies on a lot of pace, it's almost like a very Giroud sort of situation where he may not be first team. And I think that kind of fits into what Arsenal could be looking for, because they might need some experience if they end up losing either of Aubameyang or Lacazette. Both of them are highly experienced. I mean,
I think what drives this across the finish line is the free aspect of it, right? You sell someone like an Aubameyang or a Lacazette, you get some money for that player. You get Rhys Mertens on for free, and then you can actually reinvest the money you made from the sale of that striker to other departments which need some solid strengthening within the squad. So to me, it's like a best of both worlds situation. And obviously, Martinelli and Nikita, who they're other forwards, they kind of need time because they're super young. So you can't rely on them just stepping up immediately after letting go of either Aubameyang or Lacazette. So right. they do, I think, need someone whose experience kind of fits within this system, could do well, and is also available for free. I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, I get it on paper and it's Arsenal, so they wouldn't mind going in for a player who is past his peak. So, yeah, I get that.
You think he's past his peak?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think I know you keep on saying 30 is the new 20, 25, but like I said, I think it's going to be a very Giroud-like situation, and that actually makes sense for them because, like you mentioned, the Martinellis, the Reece Nelsons, Pepe plays on the wings. Bukayo Saka, who they've used left wing and left back, but he's actually more of a left attacking winger. And then there's Nketiah as well. So for all of them to have someone like Rhys Mertens in their dressing room, part of their squad, that will give Arteta wet dreams for sure.
All right, let's move into their midfield. What are your thoughts on their midfield in terms of how it's laid out, what resources they have, and what they should be doing?
I mean, look, on paper, it doesn't look that bad. I mean, names like Ozil, Danny Ceballos, Lucas Torreira, Maitland-Niles hasn't
Xhaka.
Done bad. Yeah, Xhaka, Guendouzi. But, I mean, on the pitch with Unai Emery, who didn't watch enough of Peaky Blinders to get his accent right, but... With I don't know, just on paper, it seems like, you know, this is like a well-oiled machine and they have like a strong core. But Torreira has never shown that he belongs here. He was almost like this new age Gattuso kind of player. And he was Arsenal's sort of answer to the Makelele's and the N'Golo Kante's and stuff like that. But he just never seems to like go on that consistent ride. Danny Ceballos, who they signed on loan from Madrid, shot on the scene, almost replacing Ozil and that tenacity, that orchestrator kind of role. And now we know that they either can't afford to make it permanent or they just haven't seen enough, both from player and from club, to be able to go all the way. And then the whole Xhaka captaincy issues when he was you know, facing off against his own fans. So, yeah, I think they need a big name. And I hope you have a big name, because I have some decent names to float around.
I don't have a big name. I have no expectation of Arsenal repeating a Nicolas Pepe transfer market situation again. I just don't see it to be feasible, regardless of what they say and what's happened in the past.
Right.
I'm not too sure. Even if a sale of an Auba and a Lacazette together won't be, I don't think it'll be generating the amount of money would have generated pre-Corona, right?
Right.
So a lot of points I agree with as well. I think if you notice what Arteta's done, especially with that two defensive midfield setup, yeah, which provides enough cover for his back, he's tried everyone with Granit Xhaka. Xhaka has been sort of a mainstay in terms of DM for him, but he's tried Torreira, he's tried Ceballos in that role as well. He's tried Guendouzi as well. And you see flashes of good play from all three of these players, but he hasn't found that one who can settle in and actually support Xhaka and allow Xhaka to do a little bit more in terms of the capabilities he has. So I have another defensive midfield for them in terms of someone who can stabilize that mid-pivot with Xhaka in it. That's Thomas Partey from Atletico.
Interesting. He's a fantastic player. I really like him.
Really good player. And I think he's been linked with Arsenal as well. But I think it's also someone who won't be super expensive to get. And if they play their cards right in terms of offloading a few key players, generating the right amount of money, getting some free transfers in, or calling back some loanies or something like that, then the Thomas Partys are the sort of players that they can sort of strive for.
That's interesting. I mean, I'm going in a slightly different direction, because I think they'll do okay with the young Guendouzi, who, when they're on the defensive and they're running back, you can't tell the difference between Luis and Guendouzi. But yeah, players like him, if Torreira ends up staying, Xhaka probably can stay for a while. I know Dani Ceballos is definitely on his way out. I also believe you might want to get rid of Ozil, just because of, I think he's chilling too much and collecting his pension with that fancy ass salary of his. So I had two very cool players to consider, and it was super tough going with one. But my pick is Nabil Fakir from Real Sociedad. Sorry, is that Betis? Real Betis.
Betis, yeah. He's like the most sought after player the past two or three seasons, I think, world over.
And the thing is, the whole Betis transfer in itself was kind of way left of center, because he was at Lyon. He was doing extremely well at Lyon. He made the squad for the World Cup in 2018. Had a few substitute appearances during the World Cup, so he was definitely coming onto the scene. And I think for whatever reason, because he was being chased by Klopp, by Liverpool like crazy soon after the World Cup. And I think one of Klopp's concerns and Liverpool's concerns was his fitness, and he was coming back from a very bad injury.
Right.
So Klopp and Liverpool weren't ready to splash the cash, so to say, on a player like that. Mm-hmm. And I think they did well, I think, by not going for him. And they ended up signing, I think, AOC, Oxlade-Chamberlain instead from Arsenal. I think his sort of relationship with Lyon already soured. Memphis Depay was doing his thing at Lyon, so maybe he wasn't enjoying that sort of status, and off he goes to Betis. So he's doing pretty okay in Betis. He's you know, doing the goals. He's doing the assists. He's doing his thing. I'm not sure if he's any better on the fitness front, but he's definitely one of the main players of Betis. And according to our trusty transfer market valuation, he's at a nice 30 million. It's a bit of a punt. It's not, he won't be your answer to a lot of the stuff that's going on at Arsenal, but I think he'll just be able to take away the randomness that your Ceballos's and Ozil's have done for the past 1 or 2 years. So
I agree. I think it's a good pick, and if he does come to the EPL, he will have a point to prove as well, because of the amount of teams he was linked with and the falling outs and transfers and stuff like that. So he'll have a little chip on his shoulder, something to prove, and that always drives these players as well.
Yes.
I think Ozil, from a financial point of view, he's been someone who's had to leave for the past 3 or 4 seasons. But I don't know if his high salary would be something that other clubs would want to put on their bankroll as well. So that always makes a transfer tricky as well. Okay. So I just one thing before I conclude and we move on is that the Thomas Partey transfer that I spoke about, right? Like I actually do think Guendouzi is a great player. It's just he needs a little more time. He's not ready for that regular first team football. He needs to develop a little bit more, mature a little bit more. Yes. And I have no doubt like the next 2 or 3 years, maybe he'll become one of the top CDMs in the world. So it's someone who can't be relied on right now to just make all these wars go away and make sure that Xhaka does his thing. So that's why I thought someone like Partey would make sense. I like Nabil Fakir as well. All right, so let's move to this, lack of a better word, dreaded backline that Arsenal has. I think the biggest need for some reinforcements is in that backline. A lot might argue that all 3 of our picks should have been in that backline, but I don't agree with that. I think it's like more of an overall structural change that needs to happen. But do you have any picks for the center backs or the right backs or the left backs or whatever?
Yeah, I do actually. I mean, I do know that players like Mustafi, possibly Socrates as well, they should be on their way out. And it doesn't get any better because minus these guys, we have David Luiz who, speaking from a Chelsea standpoint, he just doesn't make the cut. Besides that, they have Kieran Tierney, Sead Kolasinac. Even Tierney was supposed to be this kick-ass left-back and supposed to do great things. He was super injured, hardly played. Hector Bellerin has been injured for the longest time, just recently started playing. So, yeah, like you rightly said, their backline is so messy that... it's almost like you don't want to, like it's at the point of no return where it just cannot get better. But no, I managed to pick out a few good names for them. And number one is a free transfer, something that Arsenal should be jumping at. And that's Levin Kurzawa from PSG.
I love that guy. I think he's a top left back. Mm-hmm. And if not Arsenal, then a lot of teams are going to be chasing his signature for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, it's almost weird why he wants out from PSG. I think that's something that we haven't seen, at least in terms of his stats, because he's regularly turned out. He's not particularly first team, but he's had anywhere from 15 to 20 appearances in the domestic league for PSG consistently over the last 5 years. And he chips in with, you know, goals and assists here and there, but somehow I think he's not extending his contract. He's not signing a new one. And I think with Thomas Tuchel and whatever they've got going on at PSG, supposedly preparing for the sale of either of Neymar or Mbappe, I think there's some shakeups going up there as well. So I think he's just heeding to the warning sign and leaving a rocky boat, so to say. So, or a new challenge, maybe, whatever be the case. But yeah, he seems like a steal, definitely coming for free. He's in his prime, knows what to do at left back. He's going to be super exciting. It sucks that I chose him for Arsenal. I think I probably should have chosen for some other team, but that's how bad Arsenal's backline is, that we're taking this super seriously.
No, I think another added benefit of getting someone like Kurzawa in your left back is that it frees up Sarko to focus on the attacking side of his game as well, which I think is actually, he's shown brilliance in flashes, albeit in terms of being on that left wing side. So it'll just allow him to get more minutes under his belt with that position and just mature as a player, which is something he just needs experience right now. So having a Kurzawa just behind you, sort of making sure that stability is there, is pretty awesome. Yeah. I agree. I don't understand Kurzawa's situation too well. I haven't looked into it. I know Juan Bernat is one of the left backs who's a decent player as well. Yeah. So they're both maybe at the same level as players. So maybe that might be a reason for them to push out. They have Thomas Meunier as a right back. I think PSG's defense is pretty stacked. Off topic, but in a pretty solid position. Okay, so you have a left back. I have one pick left and it's obviously a center back. Mostly because of everything you said. Right. I actually can't believe I'm going to say this, but I disagree with your assessment for David Luiz. I think he's been that shining light, man. Especially ever since the Arteta reign began.
Because this is how bad Arsenal is.
That's a fair point. But he's actually done a decent job in terms of being that ball-playing centre-back.
Correct, yeah.
And we know that I think his weakest point is just falling back, especially when someone's running at you and getting two-footed a lot of those times. But if he's positioned well and, you know, he's deadly in the air, he's a strong, solid guy, he's decently quick for that centre-back position. So I think his position is safe, just given the amount of other centre-backs that need either replacements or whatever it is. I'm not sure who and where someone like a Mustafi or a Socrates might be going. Maybe they just stay back and create another Man United situation with 11 centre-backs in your squad. So the obvious name that I feel like this guy's been linked with every other club, so I don't have him as an option for myself, is Upamecano. He's linked with every top Premier League side, if not every top side in the world. So I actually want to disregard him just because of that particular reason. And also, he's going to be slightly expensive. Right. So I have a slightly left field option. It's not completely left field because Arsenal was linked with this player last season as well. You're going to find this surprising because it's from my beloved Juve. But I think Danny Rugani is going to make a decent centre-back with any team in the Premier League. And Arsenal is someone who's in the running for that. He's not going to be that expensive. I think pre-Corona times, he was valued at around 25 million or so. Maybe that changes. He's also fallen out of favor in that UA squad just because of the stacked centre-back lineup that they have, including a Demiral, who's number four option right now. So UA might be open to letting him leave as well. And playing for a team like Arsenal, where it's slightly more guaranteed to get first team minutes and just an Italian centre-back in London. I like the idea of that. So my pick for centre-back for Arsenal is Daniel Rugani.
Yeah, that's exactly my pick as well.
What?
Because I've had... I mean, it's surprising that you would like to clear someone who's got potential for sure, but it's just sad. I think that's the flip side of Juventus and their transfers with the great business that they do, signing God knows how many players on free, and even if they have enough of backups, they still end up buying more and more players. I don't quite understand that, but on paper, it just seems so freaking cool. But then, on the other side, you have fantastic players of at least a certain potential. And I was looking at this guy as well. Transfer Market puts his value at 12 million. I mean, I'd probably...
I'll tell you why. Because at a very crucial point in his career, he's had a couple of debilitating injuries which have come in, which have supposedly harmed his progress and come and sort of forestalled the ceiling that this player could have reached. But he's been supremely talented ever since he was a young kid. It was plain to see that he's a great defender. He's learned so much under the likes of Bonucci, Chiellini and Barzagli. And just being in that locker room and being under the tutelage of someone like a Conte and then an Allegri is bound to teach you a lot as a centre-back. It's just, Juve has so many. They still have Chiellini, they still have Bonucci, they got Demiral, they have De Ligt as well. So those are four top level centre-backs. And then it's Daniel Rugani. So obviously, it doesn't make sense. And you know, post-coronavirus lockdown, shutdown just getting lifted, I can totally see all these clubs just trying to offload some players who are not key to their team but could fetch some sort of money and reinvest. So like in that flurry of business, I can totally see a Rugani to an Arsenal happening.
Yeah, I mean, if Arsenal are looking at this in a similar way that we are, then yeah, they should be jumping at this. And it also goes with their MO of signing players who are not entirely fit. So Fakir fits that. Kieran Tierney had major issues. So for them to sign players and then go straight to the treatment table, I think that sounds fun for Arsenal.
I love it. I love how that's one prerequisite. It's an assumption. I'm assuming that Lacazette might leave and Ozil might leave, and also they're going to sign an injured player. Okay, great. So that wraps it up for our Arsenal picks. It's Mertens, Partey and Rugani for me, and it's Rugani, Fakir and Kurzawa for you, right? I think that's a pretty solid sort of aim for Arsenal to sort of, it's a lot of these are areas that need, or basis of our assumptions, will need some sort of reinforcement. So that wraps up Transfer Talks, Arsenal edition. And why don't we just jump through the news that's coming out in the world of football? And I don't want to talk about all the speculation that's been happening. There's no point to it. Right. Until something is released. So we're only going to be discussing stuff that's factual stuff that's actually been released as press statements or whatever from football associations or governments worldwide. Right. So the first thing I want to talk about is, the first two leagues that got cancelled essentially were the Belgian league, which was number one, beginning right. of April, really quickly in. And then the Dutch league followed suit. And the Dutch league actually said that there won't be any changes in terms of promotions, relegations, championships, etc. So all the teams essentially that were contesting in the Dutch league will be contesting in it the next season as well.
Right.
The contrary to which the news just broke a couple of days ago is that the League One, the French League, just got cancelled. Except that they will be awarding promotion, relegation, championships, etc. based on the table as it stands right now. So PSG are officially League One champions. There wasn't any doubt that they were going to be League One champions, but it's also reflective of the relegations and the the Champions League spots and the Europa League spots. So Amiens and Toulouse got relegated.
Right.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, then PSG and Nice, I want to say, get the Champions League spots. It's also a really weird situation because in the middle of all of this is UEFA, the governing body for Champions League and Europa League. And they just set a deadline for all of the leagues to sort of figure out what they plan to do with their seasons, because only after that, I guess, will UEFA be able to figure out what to do with firstly the current Champions League and Europa League seasons and the next year's Champions League Europa League seasons in terms of who comes in and who goes out.
Right.
So pretty messy situation, man.
Yeah, messy indeed. And in fact, with Belgium and Netherlands scrapping their leagues, it's not as consequential as a France doing what they're doing, because France is one of the top five leagues in Europe, with giants like PSG and Lyon who are still active in the Champions League. So it's extremely tricky. And I think, you know, what it looks like from the outside is that I think UEFA is just trying to work with the various football associations of these countries just to figure out if they're in a position to finish their domestic leagues and then sort of plan for what they might be able to do next season. Now, in terms of Europe, I think Europe has been hit quite badly hit. So it's kind of weird to see France just say, oh, we're not going to play any more football concerning this season. Whereas we have Germany saying, oh, our players are already training and we might be starting soon. So I think UEFA has to sort of manage these different countries and figure out which countries are doing what, because like, for example, France and Germany have similar numbers when it comes to how they're dealing with the pandemic. But literally a few days before, the prime minister said, look, nothing is going to happen before September, and the FA just said, fine, we agree, and we're with our prime minister, we're with our country, and football is not a priority. Whereas in the UK, there's been this huge debate of, a lot of the Sky Sports panels, the Gary Nevilles, the Carrickers, they're saying, why are we waiting for something really bad to happen? Why can't we just prioritize health and not see sport and revenue and everything else, over that? So it's which is why I think UEFA is trying to just wait it out, because the priority is or should be to finish the domestic seasons, because each team has anywhere from 10 to 15 domestic matches to play still. Right. Whereas in the Champions League, we're already at our quarterfinal stage. So things will become more clear towards the end. But yeah, with France doing what they're doing, what that basically means is, Stade Rennes, Marseille have qualified for the Champions League. Lille, Nice and Reims make the Europa League. And like you said, Amiens and Toulouse have been relegated. So, it's going to be really interesting to see what the rest of Europe does in weeks to come. But this is just it's getting really crazy now.
It is. I think it's also going to be a catalyst for other clubs to decide, along with the UEFA deadline. I'm sure it's just like pushing clubs to or leagues to resolve what's going on. We spoke about Germany, and now Germany might have similar numbers to France in terms of infected cases, but in terms of actual deaths and recoveries and all of that, they've handled this pandemic the best out of all of these other countries, and actually devoted a lot of resources, done a high number of testing and things like that, just to counter the growth and the spread of it, because of which they're in a much better position comparatively to restart. So the official communication from Germany's FA as well as the government has been that teams are already practicing, keeping social distancing norms in place. They've already started training as well. And they were earlier targeting a May 13th return, but I think that's gotten pushed back by at least a week, if not 2 weeks. But it still seems pretty likely that mid-May to end May is when the German league will resume, obviously behind closed doors, just because of the position they're in regarding this pandemic.
Right.
And it's so weird and contrary. I mean, I know Spain and Italy were so badly hit, but it's all speculation when it comes to Spain and Italy. There's, for example, the FIGC president, the head of the Italian league, says that football will never be, like the typical Italian romanticism, football will never be cancelled under my reign. It is like the death of sport or something like that. And then on the other hand, you see so many deaths per day still from the Lombardy region. So it's all speculation. People are saying that Spanish clubs will be allowed to resume training on May 13th, which is basically the day that Germany FA says that we can resume football, competitive football. So it just goes to show the difference in the state in which these countries are given this pandemic. Some have been so badly hit and some have actually recovered decently well. So nothing official as of yet, apart from the League One news, the UEFA news, and the German FA news that we spoke about. So yeah, that pretty much wraps it up. If there's anything that comes up during the course of us recording the next episode, we'll surely be covering it. And we'll also be throwing in another team for our Transfer Talks edition. And hopefully we all get through this. Hopefully these countries do decide sooner rather than later in terms of the resolution. Whether it's playing, whether it's cancelling, I think it's just going to give everyone a peace of mind. I think England is going to be probably the last one to decide, just because of so much money that's riding on everything within the EPL. It's much easier for a League One or a Dutch club, Dutch League, to take that decision as opposed to EPL, just because of the public pressure as well as the monetary and fiscal pressure that depends on just that league finishing off. So yeah, that wraps up this episode of TFC. Hope you guys enjoyed. Again, you can catch us wherever you get your podcasts, and we will be back next week with another round of TFC Transfer Talks and updates from the world of football during this unforeseen and hopefully never seen again pandemic. Yeah, bye-bye.
And don't forget to follow us on all social media at Muncha Podcasts.